If I asked you how many subscriptions you have, would you be able to list all of them and how much you're paying? If you would have asked me this question before I started using Rocket Money, I would have said yes. But let me tell you, I would have been so wrong. I can't believe how many I had and all the money I was wasting. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/wondery. rocketmoney.com/wondery.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
President Trump early this morning greeted a group of newly released detainees who returned to the U.S. from North Korea. Said one detainee, "Why is Donald Trump greeting us? He's the what?"
From 30 Rockefeller Plaza in New York City, please enjoy this podcast edition of Late Night with Seth Meyers. Today, Seth catches up with Michelle Wolf, a former late night writer who made a splash at the White House Correspondents' Dinner and soon will host The Break with Michelle Wolf on Netflix. Plus, Michelle sticks around to chat with late night producer Kevin Miller backstage just for this podcast. But first, a closer look.
This week, President Trump violated the Iran deal and his CIA director was grilled on her past involvement in torture. Meanwhile, Trump's supporters were calling for him to win the Nobel Peace Prize. For more on this, it's time for a closer look. Trump's attempts at diplomacy with North Korea are a positive development. And if the North and South manage to broker a peace deal with Trump's help, that would be historic. But now some people are taking it five steps further and insisting that Trump deserves the Nobel Peace Prize. And he was asked about it yesterday at the White House.
Do you deserve the Nobel Prize, do you think?
Everyone thinks so, but I would never say it.
You know what I want to do? I want to get it finished. The prize I want is victory for the world.
Victory for the world? He doesn't sound like a Nobel laureate. He sounds like a movie president fighting an alien invasion.
I want victory for the world against the space bugs, one of whom won't leave me alone. Shoo, space bug.
And again, diplomacy with North Korea is good, but this is still the same guy who wanted to ban Muslims, called Mexicans rapists, said we should kill the families of terrorists, and said he wanted fewer immigrants from Africa and Haiti. If he won a Nobel, his speech would be the first in history with an NC-17 rating. But okay, let's hear budding Nobel laureate Donald Trump answer questions in detail about his upcoming summit with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un.
Could something still scuttle this meeting, the summit?
Everything can be scuttled. Everything can be scuttled. Doesn't mean a lot of things can happen. A lot of good things can happen. A lot of bad things can happen.
Wow, soaring words. You get a more specific answer from Gmail's auto reply. Also, there's a chance he doesn't know what scuttle means.
Anything can be scuttled. Bananas. Sidewalks, you can scuttle them.
And on the same day Trump was asked about the Nobel Peace Prize, his nominee for CIA director, Gina Haspel, was being grilled in the Senate over her role in the CIA's torture program, including the time she ran a CIA black site in Thailand, where detainees were waterboarded in violation of U.S. and international law. Yesterday, Haspel was repeatedly pressed on whether torture was immoral, and she refused to answer the question.
Do you believe that the previous interrogation techniques were immoral?
Senator, I believe that CIA officers to whom you referred...
It's a yes or no answer. Do you believe in hindsight that those techniques were immoral?
Senator, what I believe sitting here today is that I support the higher moral standard we have decided to hold ourselves to.
Can you please answer the question?
Senator, I think I've answered the question.
No, you've not.
I love when they say, I answered your question. as if it's a Jedi mind trick. These are not the answers you're looking for. In another revealing exchange, Haspel was pressed on whether she would follow an order from President Trump to illegally waterboard a detainee, and her immediate answer was not reassuring.
If the CIA has a high-value terrorism suspect in its custody, and the president gave you a direct order to waterboard that suspect, what would you do?
Senator, I would advise, I do not believe the president would ask me to do that.
All right, first of all, moving forward, no one is allowed to say, I do not believe the president would, followed by any terrible thing. If you don't believe the president would shove a nun, you're not trying hard enough to envision a situation where a nun would be in his way. And second of all, did you miss this?
I would bring back waterboarding, and I'd bring back a hell of a lot worse than waterboarding.
If I say do it, they're gonna do it. That's what leadership is all about.
No. If I say do it, they're gonna do it is not leadership. That's the Westminster Dog Show. And now, to be fair to President Trump, President Obama also nominated a CIA director, John Brennan, who was a defender of torture. So this isn't unique to Trump. It's something we all have to eventually reckon with. And while Trump's nominee for CIA director was refusing to disavow her role in an illegal torture program, Trump was also busy violating the Iran nuclear deal. Trump has long railed against the Iran deal, but he doesn't actually have a coherent argument against it. All he does is mock the people who wrote it. Like former Secretary of State John Kerry. Kerry famously got in a cycling accident while he was negotiating the deal. And that's apparently the one thing Trump knows about it because he keeps mentioning it over and over, as he did yet again at an NRA conference last week.
The former administration, as represented by John Kerry, the best negotiator we've ever seen. He never walked away from the table except to be in that bicycle race where he fell and broke his leg. That's the only thing. I said, don't tell him you broke your leg. Just stay inside. Say you don't want to negotiate. You'll make a much better deal. But he broke his leg. And I learned from that. At 73 years old, you never go into a bicycle race, okay? Just don't.
Yeah, I don't think anyone was worried you'd get into a bicycle race. Mostly because they don't allow golf carts. It is so, so Donald Trump that he keeps harping on Kerry breaking his leg. Trump is like the guy you went to high school with who never forgets your most embarrassing moment. You see him at a reunion and say, hey there, Dale McCaffrey, I sat behind you in math. I remember when you crapped your pants at prom. Look, everyone, it's Crappy Dale. Now, Trump's comments about Iran have been mostly incoherent, but his inner circle has been much clearer. They want regime change. For example, Trump's newest lawyer, Rudy Giuliani, who made that very clear over the weekend in a speech he gave to opponents of the Iranian regime.
We've got a president who's tough, a president who doesn't listen to the people who are naysayers, and a president that is as committed to regime change as we are.
Why is the president's lawyer giving foreign policy speeches? The highest job he ever held was mayor. His idea of foreign policy was having lunch with the mayor of Hoboken. Also, if anyone should be worried about regime change, it's Rudy Giuliani. Based on how things are going, I'd guess he has a week left in his job tops. When he goes on Fox News, they should introduce him as the season finale of Rudy Giuliani. Giuliani is not the only one of Trump's associates who has openly called for regime change. Just take Trump's national security advisor, John Bolton, who said this just last year.
The declared policy of the United States of America should be the overthrow of the mullah's regime in Tehran.
Now, I don't know if Trump will actually listen to John Bolton, but there's hope because, as you may recall, Trump was originally reluctant to hire Bolton, not because of his insane foreign policy ideas, but because of Bolton's brush-like mustache, with one associate saying Donald was not going to like that mustache. So if Trump is thinking of taking Bolton's advice on Iran, I would just like to say, Mr. President, look at that mustache. Can you really trust a guy with a mustache like that? He looks like evil Mark Twain. John Bolton is Dark Twain. He looks like he walked into a barbershop and said, give me half a Wilford Brimley. So Trump is surrounding himself with people who make clear they want regime change in Iran, which undercuts one of the central claims of Trump's presidential campaign that he was the anti-war candidate. As you might recall, he repeatedly went out of his way to claim falsely that he was opposed to the Iraq war, which he said over and over again was a disaster.
George Bush made a mistake. We can make mistakes, but that one was a beauty. We should have never been in Iraq. We have destabilized the Middle East. They lied.
Okay.
They said there were weapons of mass destruction. There were none, and they knew there were none.
Look at the mess we have. We've destabilized the Middle East, and it's a mess. Had we not done anything, had our politicians gone to the beach and enjoyed the sun, we would be in a lot better position than we are right now. What we've done is incredible. If we would have, if our presidents would have just stayed home and gone to the beach, or even gone out and played golf every single day, played two rounds a day, okay? Which Obama almost does.
Obama played two rounds a day? Trump plays so much golf, I wouldn't be surprised if he played during meetings.
Rudy, open wide.
Hole in one. Hole in one.
And yet Trump and his allies are now repeating the same mistakes that got us into the Iraq war that he claimed to oppose. Last week, for example, the Trump administration issued a stunning warning claiming that Iran has a robust clandestine nuclear weapons program. Now, the key word there is has. The Trump administration seemed to be saying that Iran currently has a secret ongoing nuclear program right now. In other words, they're saying Iran has WMDs. If that were true, it would be massive news. But it quickly turned out it was a mistake.
One single word in a White House statement set off a barrage of alarm and questions about Iran's nuclear capability. The initial statement said that Iran has, present tense, a robust clandestine nuclear weapons program. An updated statement sent a couple of hours later read, Iran had, past tense, such a program. The White House claims that was a, quote, clerical error.
Wow, that is a hell of a typo. That's like your doctor saying, you have 40 days to live. Whoops, sorry, years, 40 years. So it was a one-letter typo, which is no small thing. If we're not careful, we could end up invading Iraq again by accident. And something tells me the Trump tweet about that will be short. Trump is repeating the same mistakes that got us into the Iraq war, and he's being cheered on by many of the same people who orchestrated that war. In fact, the only lesson Trump seems to have learned is...
You never go into a bicycle race.
This has been A Closer Look. Our guest tonight is a very funny comedian you know from her work at The Daily Show and here at Late Night. She's now the host of her very own show called The Break with Michelle Wolf, which begins streaming May 27th on Netflix. Please welcome back to the show our very good friend, Michelle Wolf, everybody. Hi there!
Hi!
Oh my God, I'm so happy you're back. And we've talked since, but let me just say in person, congratulations on an incredible job at the Correspondents' Dinner.
Thank you, thank you.
And how did,
It went great, and every single person loved it.
Yeah. Every single person across the board.
Yeah.
Never happened before.
No, everyone loved it. Even, actually, Sarah Huckabee Sanders called me, and she was like, I loved it so much, I got every joke.
Really?
Yeah.
Because I was watching, there were a few that seemed like she maybe didn't like or get.
Well, you know, you give the best information you have at the time.
You will be very happy. There was a tweet that I saw, and knowing our relationship, I thought you were just going to love this. This was basically a C-SPAN posted that in 3 days, you became the most watched Correspondents' Dinner ever. You beat me. So basically, in what it took me 7 years to do, you outdid me in 3 years.
Yeah, I'm going to frame that.
Yeah, you outdid me. Well deserved.
It's great. Yeah, I think that means I'm the father of your children now.
Yeah, I think that might be it.
They're mine now.
So I want to ask you about another photo. This is afterwards. This is a bunch of your writers. You were just finished and you walked into a party. And this photo, I think, was maybe even in the New York Times.
Yeah.
What is everybody chanting as you walked in?
They're chanting, lock her up.
A perfect way to end the evening. Obviously, you had... This blows my mind, because you were preparing for the Correspondents' Dinner. You're preparing for your new show that I want to talk about. But you also had time to train and then run a 50-mile race.
Yeah.
And I know you to be a runner.
Yeah.
What convinced you to try to do 50 miles at once?
Well, I wanted to do, it's an ultra marathon, and I wanted to do that because I, like, anyone can do a marathon. Like, even you did a marathon.
I've done.
Yeah, except for that one that you didn't finish.
I had a leg injury. I had an injury.
But you didn't finish. Yeah, you just couldn't do it.
I could have hobbled and done, like, more damage to my leg.
Or you could have sucked it up.
Yeah. Well, I didn't, so, but if
most people power through.
Where did you do your 50 mile?
It was in the Salt Flats in Utah. Uh-huh. We have a salt flat here.
Or just someone who, they just might be someone who loves salt.
Yeah. It's great. It's just, so then I spent the weekend in Utah, and that's Mormon country. And I was with my nephews at a playground. I wasn't by myself, I promise. But there was this guy at the playground wearing a t-shirt that said, "Porn kills love." At the playground!
Yeah.
With the children.
Right.
Because they need to know.
That's true.
But I was like, regardless of your feelings about porn, like, the graphic tees definitely kill love.
That's true.
No one's ever been like, "Oh, a graphic tee." I feel like that manatee now.
That's how I proposed. I wore a "Will You Marry Me?" So you're preparing for your Netflix show. This is very exciting. How has preparation gone so far?
It's great. I would have to say that if you hated the correspondence dinner, you're really going to hate this show.
That I think is good to hear for a lot of people.
Yeah.
You worked here. Is there anything you learned from working here that now that you're in charge, you are bringing to that project?
Well, I did. I learned a lot from you. Like, every morning I walk into the writer's room and I reference a foreign film that no one's possibly seen.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Like, did you see The Dark Trombone?
Yeah.
Everyone in Slovenia is talking about it.
No, I think that's a thing that people like.
No one ever watches it.
I always assumed that after I left the room, you all talked about how excited it was that I told you about a film you didn't want to see.
Yeah, that's what we said. That's definitely what we said.
Do you think you're a good boss so far?
I mean, I'm really lucky because I don't have any Michelles on my staff. So all my writers are really nice.
Yeah. You are, you would even write things on purpose just because you wanted to hear me say them. You didn't think they would work.
Yes.
You just thought they would delight you because I would fail and you enjoyed my failure.
It's fun.
Yeah. Is there anything that you are not good at that they figured out that they want to make you do?
Yeah, no, they figured out almost immediately that I can't do accents.
Yeah.
And so they write into a lot of the jokes me doing an accent. And I can't do any accent. I can barely do my voice.
Well, your voice seems like it takes a lot of energy.
It's so hard.
The fact that with the calories you burned in that 50-mile race, how did you have anything left to speak for, like, days?
Oh, it was easy. I'm telling you. You wouldn't have been able to do it.
All right, let's try. Can we try some accents? Just don't think of it. Clear your head.
Okay.
Scottish.
Oh, the little doggy. French golfing.
What? Little doggy what?
The little doggy went golfing.
Got it. Australian.
Down under, we have sharks.
That was better.
That wasn't too bad.
No, that was bad. It's certainly better than little doggy went golfing.
I don't know why I have to feel like I have to say something they would say.
Yeah, right. Well, every time you meet anyone, they give you two details about their country. Germany.
Das no, ja, okay.
That was your best one. That was by far your best one. You mentioned, I heard you say that the nice thing about you having your own show is you can now tell jokes that you wouldn't, either your bosses on your old shows, Daily Show here, wouldn't be able to say or wouldn't let you say. What are some of the subjects you're tackling that you have the freedom to do now?
Yeah, I got a lot of fun stuff that you wouldn't let me do. Mm-hmm.
Like what kind of stuff?
Just wait till they laugh at this one. You know what's great about a joke? When you set it up. I'll tell jokes like, when Hillary is like, I really wanted to have the first female president. It'd be great to have Hillary be the president because then you could show that women can do anything as long as their husband did it first. I would have loved to have Bill Clinton as the first gentleman because the spouse of the president is the one who sometimes gives tours of the White House. And I would have loved to see Bill be like, these are our drapes. They're covered in my semen. Everything in this office is covered in my semen. Don't turn on a black light.
I think that's an excellent advertisement for The Break with Michelle Wolf on Netflix. I'm so happy for you. I can't wait to see your new show, and it's just always so wonderful to have you here.
Hey, thanks. You said here on. it's so wonderful to have you here.
Did you turn into
50 Cent no, at I the was, end of this?
It's so great to have you here.
That's Nelly.
What?
Nelly, sorry.
Look,
don't end the segment.
Yeah, that's right. When I end the segment, you have to go back to work. Give it up for Michelle Wolf, everybody. The Break and Michelle Wolf against Stephen Weekly, May 27th.
Hey, this is Kevin. We are backstage with Michelle Wolf. Hi, Michelle.
Hi, Kevin.
Thanks for being here tonight.
Oh, of course. It's so fun. It's fun to come back home.
Are there things that you missed from being here?
I genuinely miss everyone.
Yeah.
It was so fun. I loved being here. Everyone's nice, except for that one guy.
Yeah, that one guy. It's really fun to watch you bust Seth for pretty much everything. Was there a first time you remember when, like, he was, like, responsive to that?
I think I was really lucky because I started with Connor.
Uh-huh.
And Connor was already making fun of him. And I was like, oh, it's a thing we're allowed to do.
Just piled on what Connor was doing.
Yeah.
Connor O'Malley, one of our writers who was here at the beginning when the show started. Well, congrats on the White House Correspondents' Dinner again. What was the preparation like for you to begin to tackle something like that?
I started out, I wrote, as soon as I found out, I tried to write as many jokes as possible just to see, like, if I could. I was like, what can I write about? And then I was trying it at the Comedy Cellar, like, starting in the beginning of April, I was just trying it out at the Comedy Cellar as often as I could, which had to be a bummer for the people in the audience because they're like, 20 minutes of politics.
Yeah.
But, that was really helpful. And then in, like, the last week, I figured out how to, like, tie it all together. And
did you have a lot of friends helping you write jokes?
I had the people from my writing staff. I had Scollins, Andrew Law, Matt Goldich were all giving stuff, and then a lot of my stand-up friends. Dan Soder helped out a bunch, and yeah.
What was your reaction right after your performance?
I flubbed like two lines, and that's like all I could think about. I was like, I flubbed two lines, and people were like, no one will notice. And then I finally talked to one of my friends who I knew would be honest with me, and I was like, I flubbed two lines. She's like, I know.
I noticed.
I was like, thank you.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then I just went to a party. I had fun. Yeah.
I know you said it on the show, but you walked into this party and your friends were chanting when you walked in.
Yeah, they all started chanting, lock her up, lock her up. It was a great moment.
Yeah.
I probably feel very differently about that chant than Hillary.
There was immediate blowback. There was a fake news article that was even printed about you
The one that said I was convicted of bestiality.
Which, this was in your hometown newspaper, right?
In my hometown, my poor hometown newspaper had to issue a statement saying that it was not true. This, like, poor, like, probably, like, they probably, like, volunteer, you know? It's probably not even a paid position, and they just get bombarded, and they're like, it's not real.
This was a fake news article that was mocked up and online somehow from your hometown in Hershey, Pennsylvania that you were convicted of
bestiality. And two things about it is, one, they were so close to making it look good. Like, it looked official, except, like, for some reason in their Photoshop, they couldn't get some of the words close enough together.
Uh-huh.
So there's, like, large gaps in between words, and I'm like, that's not how newspapers work.
It's like the right and left columns.
Yeah, it's like what are you? And then the other thing is that it said I pled guilty to bestiality, and then that I was fined $1,000, and I was like, Well, I mean, if anybody wants to, you know, f a dog, that's not that much money.
$1,000. I mean,
$1,000. I mean, you know, you can save up for that.
That's the going rate, I guess.
Yeah.
Your show premieres the 27th of mm-hmm. May on Netflix. So you're going back to work tonight?
Well, we have our first test show tomorrow. Uh-huh. So we are in the process of, we did a table read this afternoon and we're in the process of rewriting and kind of tweaking and trying to make it good enough. 2 weeks from tomorrow, we'll tape our first
actual show.
Yeah.
That's so exciting. We're so happy for you. And thanks again for coming back and hanging out.
It's all very terrifying. Yeah.
Thanks, Michelle.
Thanks, Kevin.
Want more Late Night with Seth Meyers? Be sure to follow the handle @LateNightSeth on Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat. You can also watch full episodes of Late Night at LateNightSeth.com or on the NBC app. And please tell your friends who are fans of Seth Meyers to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes.
I love a good parasocial relationship with a celebrity who will probably never know my name.
I mean, honestly, who knows? Don't count yourself out. But my favorite part about these feuds is how they're ignited by the tiniest things.
Jada, I love you. G.I. Jane 2, can't wait to see it.
I accidentally laminated my brows too much.
It starts small and then it gets so big.
To be honest, Naomi, I'm fearful of you to this day.
I don't know her.
We all just have to admit, we're addicted. Everybody has opinions. Everyone picks sides.
Leave Britney Spears alone right now.
From Wondery, I'm Sydney Battle.
And I'm Matt Bellassai.
And this is Dis and Tell, la, 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 where we unpack why we get so invested in these feuds and whether or not our attention only makes the whole thing worse.
Follow Dis and Tell wherever you get your podcasts.